With Robinhood Gold, you don't need a silver spoon to eat up the financial favors of the 1%. Robinhood Gold allows the resourceful individual to earn the very liberal rate of 4.5% APY on uninvested cash and be rewarded with a handsome 3% retirement boost on an IRA account. Robinhood Gold provides the privileges of a high net worth for any net worth for just $5 a month. The new gold standard is here. Sign up at Robinhood.com/gold. Terms apply. For product-specific disclosures, visit Robinhood.com/gold. Investing involves risk. Rate may change. Gold membership is offered by Robinhood Gold LLC.
Hey, Andre, welcome to this very special, we're going to call it a bonus episode of Talking Trucks.
Cool.
Because we're going to be doing our SEMA wrap-up, but more importantly, kind of give you guys the behind-the-scenes info, the look behind the curtain of what it's like.
The secrets of SEMA.
The secrets of SEMA. Maybe we should call it that. The secrets of SEMA. Okay. Sounds vaguely vulgar.
The secrets of Las Vegas. No, that's a different podcast.
Or right? Naughty. I don't know. So Andre and I just got back from SEMA, and we published two videos, two walk-arounds. One was, of course, our car channel, and the other one was in the truck channel. The truck
podcast.
Yeah, podcast. Yeah. And somebody said in one of the comments, this is not a podcast, the walk around. I disagree. I think it was a good podcast.
Well, I mean, of course, it was a lot of visuals.
Yeah. Does a podcast have to be the two of us sitting next to each other
in the studio?
Yeah, with a picture behind us?
It doesn't have to be.
No, it could be a walk around. So I think that was. I think actually, that was, in a lot of ways, that was a more interesting. I know it's tough if you're listening to it. Because you're not seeing it, but I think we tried to do our best to describe it. But we've got some interesting comments, so let's before we get to kind of what it was like to be there, and a little bit of the gossip, Andre, and a little bit of the fun stuff that happened behind the scenes. Here's my favorite comment from the truck video. This is what happens when you mix Roman's adult ADD with Andre's OCD at an automotive show. It got 39 thumbs up.
Awesome. Thank you for that comment.
Too true. Ha ha. So true. Ain't it great? Those are some of the replies to that comment. And then this guy said, God, I hate Roman.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was Matthew Winslow. 5370. Sorry, Matt.
What? Can you explain yourself?
One of my best friends is his name is Winslow. I hope that's not him. His name is Scott, though. It's not Matthew.
Okay.
Another guy said, "I like you."
Okay.
But I don't know if he was referring to me or you or just
somebody
the video.
Else. Maybe Chloe.
Yeah.
Wasn't Chloe in our show and Nicole Wakeland?
Yeah. Somebody said, "Hey, Chloe." Somebody else said, "Two old guys overdosed on energy drinks." Thanks. Yeah, I really appreciate that.
Actually, we weren't. We were just high on SEMA.
Yeah, exactly. On the energy of the floor. This is like Beavis and Butthead episodes. People like that one. That one got 8 thumbs up, 9 thumbs up.
How so? Is that because
I think
say something like that?
I think we're just being goofy. You know, it's very lighthearted, and we did that on purpose. So when we do those walk-arounds, go on ahead and watch them. Head on over to alltfl.com. If we try to make them an hour, we only actually covered two of the, 5-6 hauls that were there?
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah, we try to cover the truck and off-road haul, and then we try to kind of cover the main car haul. But we try to be, lively and kind of fun and not take ourselves too seriously. And I made a bunch of mistakes and people are giving me, I called a Nova, a Chevelle. I pointed to a supercharger and what did I call it? I called it a turbocharger. No, it was worse than that.
I don't remember.
Maybe I pointed to a supercharger and called it a battery. I don't know. but in our defense, guys, or in my defense, there's a boat ton of people there. And thousands of cars, tens of thousands of people. And unlike when we go to a regular auto show, now we're kind of getting behind the scenes.
Yeah.
There's no media date. Well, there is. It's half like hour.
Half hour every morning. There may be a media time.
Yeah, except we spent the half hour having our bag searched.
Yeah. Security is very important.
Yeah. We were. So apparently if you get there 8:30, they won't let the exhibitors in until 9, but we got there 8:30, and there was a long-ass line of people, so by the time we got in both days, it was already going. So most auto shows, L.A., Chicago, New York.
There's a special media day.
Or
day and a half,
day and
maybe.
A half, where it's only journalists. And the great thing about that is it's not wall-to-wall people, and so you can get next to a car, you can talk to the PR reps, you can video the car. It's really nice because it gives you a chance to kind of get a sense of lay of the land, and then what you want to cover. SEMA, it's like a fast moving river. Once you get into a stream of people,
that's it.
You're not going anywhere. And the other thing, and maybe this is something that's been going on a long time. You know, SEMA stands for the Specialty Equipment Manufacturers Association.
Yes.
So it's all the aftermarket, all the tuners, anything you can think of that you can do with a car, you're going to have at SEMA, and a truck.
Or any vehicle. We saw a boat.
Or
a hydrogen-powered boat we saw there.
Exactly. So
yes.
Getting your arms around that is really hard, right? Trying to figure out, like, because a lot of it is kind of basic stuff, right? It's people selling paint protection. There's even a Traxxas booth, people selling remote-controlled cars.
Yeah, there's tools, there's lifts,
yeah, so,
welders.
Yeah. Oh, there's a whole floor of nothing but, like, Harbor
tools.
Freight
yes.
and tools for fixing and painting cars and trying to figure out, you know, which of the cars that actually are modified
or newsworthy
are cool and newsworthy is hard because I've never seen so many lifted trucks. But there's one that you've got up on the screen here that we should talk about because that was the one that really stood out to me. What is that, Andre? It looks like a Miata with two pop-up headlights, but they're not.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your vehicle. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your vehicle, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your vehicle hassle-free and fast, go to tfltruck.com and click Sell Your Truck in the navigation menu. Or click on the HiRoad ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. HiRoad makes it easy, and we like easy.
Yeah, so this is, I think, the definition of 2024 SEMA. This car was outside. By the way, anybody outside of the convention hall can walk up to the SEMA show and actually see some of the vehicles outdoors. And then on Friday, of course, you can go inside as well. This is a Mazda Miata with a giant hole in the hood and an engine popping out of it. And the engine, if you come up close to this car, is a Lamborghini V10. And
is it 10 or 12?
10.
It's a 10.
And it's twin turbocharged. So where the pop-up headlights used to be on the Miata, they're completely taken up by a turbocharger on each side.
Yeah, so I think this was, for me, the most interesting car of the show. Whoever thought of putting a V10 Lamborghini
in the Miata.
Kudos
to you.
Kudos to you. I wonder if it's drivable.
We don't know.
I'm sure it runs, but I wonder if it's actually drivable. You would perhaps toast those rear tires pretty quickly.
With one touch of the accelerator.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Now, some of the stuff at SEMA, especially some, we didn't have a chance to because we ran out of time, but Andre wanted to go. I was getting all nervous trying to get back to the hotel because it was snowing in Denver, and I wanted to make sure we got to the airport because I knew there were delays, which there were, but that's me. But Andre wanted to go and do a walk around of all the millions of lifted trucks that are parked in front of SEMA.
And not just lifted trucks. We're talking about monstrous trucks. Trucks with 30-inch wheels and like 44-inch tall tires.
Yeah, so here's the thing about those trucks, Andre, and this is why I wasn't that keen on actually going out, because there's a lot of them there, right? And they all have underglow. They're all, you know, painted. They all have dub wheels.
And they have chrome everywhere. They're works of art.
You need a ladder, like an extension ladder, to crawl into the seat. But
yeah.
Here's the thing that bugs me, and this is a Roman thing, and you can call me a grumpy old man, and that's fair, but this is a Roman thing. Those trucks can only be driven off the truck and parked barely, because they don't turn, wherever they're at. But you cannot take those on the street. You cannot use those for anything outside of showing off at SEMA. Right? They're not street legal, obviously.
You can't generalize all of them this.
That's not street legal, dude.
How do you know?
Because that just isn't. Because it can't turn. That thing won't turn. It barely can.
Maybe it could turn.
It won't go under a bridge.
Well, it's less than 13 feet.
there were ones that were much more than 13.
There are ones that are taller than 13 feet. But if you're 13.5, that's a standard regulation semi-truck height that you could use.
Imagine if you're in traffic in that truck that we're looking at now. This has got, what would you say, 3-foot lift on it, something like that, 4-foot lift. How do you even see what car's in front of you?
I don't know if you need to see
those headlights. I know America is very lax with, but
we're very relaxed.
We do have some rules, Andre. Those headlights would not illuminate anything.
Well, they would illuminate my head.
Yeah, if you were standing. And the taillights, you couldn't see either, right? You would just run under that thing because you would see these two taillights that seem to be UFO things. So I don't think that those trucks are street legal. I think that they're, you know, show girls or show trucks, which is fine, meant to show off, you know, fabricators and meant to show off parts.
But
to me, if you can't put it on the street, and of course, it looks like it would be off-road worthy. The second you would drive that thing off-road, something would snap. A drive shaft would snap. A wheel bearing would crack, right? A piece of trim would fall off. Something would go horribly wrong if you try to even take that thing off-road.
So Nathan has a good term for this.
Okay, what is it?
If Nathan was here on this podcast, he would say something like, this truck is lifted and lowered at the same time. Because what happens with these trucks, right, they're, of course, the cabs and beds are lifted, 2, 3, 4 feet off the ground. But some of the suspension components are actually lower because they have to support the axles or they have to support some of the other components. So basically, like you said, you're basically making a truck that used to be a tool and a very useful thing into something showy that you can almost not use.
Yeah, and then the other thing that the reason I didn't necessarily want to go do that, because you were kind of angry with me, and I don't blame you. You wanted to go do a video on these.
Well,
things.
I was like a child at the candy store.
I know,
you were like a
kid, and I said, no, you can't have any more Tootsie Rolls. No more Tootsie Rolls, Andre. You've had enough. The other reason that I didn't want to go is because after you've seen one, you've kind of seen them all. You know what I mean? They're all kind of, one's painted blue, one's painted lime green, one's painted lime orange. You see where I'm going with that? It all kind of is the same thing after a while. So these are not my favorite things. I like my favorite things are like that Miata where it's something that's so bombastic, so over the top, right? And I'm sure when the first lifted 15-foot truck came around, it was bombastic and it was over the top. But now it kind of became this cliche of itself.
The norm, yeah.
The norm, yeah. Yeah, and so at first we were looking at some modern trucks, but I've also seen classic, you know, when I say lifted, I mean like 20 inches or 4 feet, right? These crate, right? That's what I'm talking about. And then they start lifting like classic trucks. So I like stuff that is like this Miata where it potentially drives,
it
steers.
But how useful is this? It's completely unusable. So it's almost the same thing. I mean, you can't see in the front. The engine is above the hood.
I mean, this one is depending on how big your cojones are. So you can take this on the street, at least in the daytime, because it's lost its headlights.
Yeah.
And if you're brave enough, you can drive this on the street, right? But that truck is undrivable, right? It goes to SEMA, and then it goes on a bed of a semi-truck and goes back home to wherever it came from. And then maybe the next year they repaint it and bring it back to SEMA.
Send your hate mail to...
I'm done being grumpy. So let's talk about the cool stuff that we saw. Because there is so much cool stuff. So a lot of these comments we got, Andre, were from people saying that we're Toyota fanboys because we did do a lot of Toyota coverage. Why was that, Andre? Why did we do a lot of Toyota coverage?
Well, because Toyota helped us to be there.
Yeah, they invited us.
They invited us, yes. So they invited us because they did have many, many vehicles that they were debuting, concepts, different parts, different things that they were showing. And they invited not just us, they invited several outlets, right?
Yeah.
Several journalists. There are some influencers, you know, different platforms.
Chloe was there. She's a big Toyota gal.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And several others. So thank you, Toyota. That's why we spent quite a bit of time there.
As a thank you to them. Obviously, look, if somebody pays for your flight, if they buy you a hotel room, which we were bought, the hotel room was bought. In the Cosmopolitan, so we got to stay in the Cosmo, which was a nice hotel. And then they provided us transportation, and then they bought us two nice dinners. I just want to be completely transparent. So this sounds like we were bought, but we weren't bought. Nobody at Toyota said to us, you have to cover us. In fact, we didn't have to cover them, but because we were appreciative of the fact that they helped us go to SEMA, helped us get there, and help us stay there. We covered their vehicles, and also some of the most interesting vehicles were the Toyota vehicles.
Yeah,
and
for example, the most popular was the Land Cruiser Rocks.
Yeah, but we also covered the Kia, and Kia did not, you know, buy us a hotel room. We'll get to that in a second.
Yes,
but my point is, and this is an important one. With the way the media landscape is nowadays, with the amount of YouTube revenue that we generate doing these videos, there's no way, Andre, we could afford to fly ourselves, book a hotel. Dude, look, I'm showing you my iced tea right here. This is what I drink. I drink this Lipton iced tea.
Yeah.
And you know, it's gotten ridiculous now. In the past, when we go to a car show, in the media room, they would provide you with lunch and breakfast because they were
Water and coffee.
They were appreciative of the fact that you were providing coverage and exposure and free publicity for their show. So if you're like at the LA Auto Show, the reason they do the press days ahead of time is so that they get the local people excited to come in and, of course, check out the vehicles.
Yeah, check out the show.
Pay the entrance fee. Yeah. SEMA doesn't give a rat's ass. In fact,
well, the focus is different.
We
have to be clear.
Yeah, it's an industry show.
It's an industry show where kind of business to business, a lot of the stuff is business to business, where, you know, you're either buying vendors or, you know, vendors are coming to see the products or maybe franchise
but
owners.
The reason I say they don't really care is because they don't have a media day. They did have some like iced tea that they provided, to be fair, and I think maybe
in the paid shop.
But what they put up was they put up a snack shop in the press room where you had to buy your own snacks. Now I know I sound like I'm whiny, but you know, we are providing relatively free exposure to them, and you know, to pay $7 for a Lipton iced tea.
$7,
yeah, for one Lipton iced tea. Just seemed a little over the top, especially since we're working hard.
But I have another gripe.
Wow, this is becoming a gripe fest. We'll get to the fun stuff, I promise.
No, the Wi-Fi room.
Wi-Fi is so bad.
We logged in to the media store room Wi-Fi to upload our videos because we want to be first always. We're very competitive, at least I am very competitive. And the Wi-Fi was so slow, it was faster to actually, like an LTE or 5G phone, to upload it.
Get everything for your next project today at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
This is a story of the one. As a maintenance specialist for university housing, he knows college students can major in wear and tear. Plus, housing so many students doesn't leave a lot of room to house all the supplies he needs. That's where Grainger comes in. With over a million industrial-grade products and fast, dependable delivery, Grainger carries the quality products he needs so he doesn't have to. From a new door hinge to a whole new faucet. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, and we're just trying to get that stuff up there. I you know that 1 hour walk around we did for car? I spent like 2 hours uploading and 1 hour filming it. That's just freaking ridiculous. And I thought about, you know, using their internet, the CMS internet. It was $80 a day to sign up
for the
cruddy slow service. And if you wanted the good service, I think it was for like 4 days, $300. And you're like, Jesus, guys, we're just trying to help you out here, trying to get the stuff out there so that people see it, so that, you know. And even though SEMA is a trade show, it still does build buzz. But anyway.
And actually, it's kind of a bucket list for a lot of people.
It is
a lot of enthusiasts. Like I was talking, you know, to some, you know, people who live near me in Colorado here. They asked where I was going, and I said I was going to Las Vegas to the SEMA show. And they're like, whoa, I wish one day, you know, I would be able to see or go to Las Vegas and actually see some of this stuff.
But I gotta have a confession, Andre. I hate going to SEMA because, like, your buddy there, or, you know, whoever that was,
yes,
they have this, like, imagination that they're going to go and, you know, go gambling in the evening, go to nice restaurants, and then go stroll through SEMA. For us, it's, like, super hard work. I mean, it's hard to get your arms around it. It's hard to figure out where things are. By the Second day, really the media coverage, from my point of view, depends on how close it is to the press room because we've walked so much. I think last year you got, 27,000 steps?
A day.
A day.
Yeah. This year we did a little bit less.
And that's just going and figuring out. That's not filming. That's not, And I know this sounds whiny because there are much tougher jobs than we have out there, and I appreciate and I understand that. But as in terms of media, this is, about as long of a day as it gets.
Yeah, and also I want to mention one more thing about, Toyota inviting some outlets, including us, right?
Yeah. Because Brady was there. Who else is there? Let's just name names.
Names. Let's drop all the names.
Who else?
Jared Carbuzz.
Yeah, Carbuzz.
Carbuzz was there. Overland Journal was there.
Yeah, Scott was there.
Ex-Overland was there.
Those guys are great. Yeah, and these have become our friends because we see them so much. So it's.
But here's the thing, Roman. Yeah. For you and I,
our man Sam. Hey, Sam. He was there.
Oh, yes.
I saw him. I didn't see him there, but I saw him.
He was on television
on a video screen. On a panel, so
yeah,
that's from Wheel Bearings, by the way.
And Nicole Wakeland was there, not with Toyota.
No,
I think I'm not sure how Nicole got there. But you and I, Roman, we didn't have to do this. We could have bought our own rooms. We could have flew there ourselves. But for us, it's still a business, right?
Yeah.
So for us, we need to know what our return on investment would be. So without knowing what Toyota was going to show or what Kia was going to show. Or we had no idea this Miata Lamborghini was there. So without knowing all those things in advance, it's hard to us to prove that we can make money.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, Andre, if we had shown up and done it all ourselves, we would have lost money. And it's hard enough to do this without knowing you're losing money doing it. That's why I especially appreciate the patrons who support us. If you want to head on over to patreon.com/TFLcar and be one of those guys and gals that, has our back. We really appreciate it. It allows us to not be so nervous at night about where we're going to be paying our rent. So we really appreciate those guys. And you also, if you happen to join, you get access to videos first. We do behind-the-scenes videos. We comment on your comments much more so than we can because we get thousands of comments on the regular videos. So we really appreciate you. So thank you very much.
Yeah, totally appreciate it. So more. Let's talk more.
All right. Let's talk. Let's go to the fun stuff. Okay.
Yes.
So for me, the biggest surprise were two vehicles. Not my favorite, but the biggest surprise. Okay. So
what is it?
So the first one that I didn't see coming was that van the Kia unveiled.
I had no idea
You want to tell them about that thing? That was way cool.
Yeah. So Kia Weekender, it's called.
And it's not spelled the way you think it is.
No. They removed all the vowels. It's all in consonants. But Kia, of course, and Hyundai Group and Genesis, right? They have history at SEMA, right? Kia has been coming to SEMA for at least 20 years. At least that's what they told us. They had two veiled vehicles, right? We showed up there on Tuesday morning. They had two veiled vehicles completely covered, and one looked like a box, so that piqued my interest already, and the other one looked like an SUV, right? So this was already interesting, and when they took the the covers off.
The SUV was an EV9 that they had slapped, some bigger tires on.
Yes.
And did a little bit of a lift. Nothing that we haven't seen before.
Some nice touches,
a little bit of nicer quality interior to show off their bespoke creation. But the one that blew our mind was this commercial electric van that they had converted into kind of the next generation of off-roading vans. And here's the thing, Andre. For the longest time, concept vehicles, right, were these like way out concepts that the designers would do, and then you knew they would never get built because they were so expensive to create and they had so much like cutting edge technology.
They're bespoke, right? Everything was unique.
And then somehow over the years, these concepts became almost like the first one I saw was a Stinger, right? Remember the Kia Stinger?
Yeah.
When they showed that was production ready. So I've gotten used to seeing concepts that are basically what's coming to your local dealer, not this thing. This thing was so far out there. Why don't you tell them about some of the coolest features? And you can see this in our video, but we'll tell you now as well.
And I like really useful things. I like simple things. And this is basically a cab over van, kind of like something dear to my heart, a the Buhanka van, which is my personal project that I work on. But basically that means it's small on the outside and humongous on the inside.
By the way, Andre was flying after our dinner because he sat next to Scott Brady, who runs the Overland Journal.
I was on cloud nine.
Yeah, and Scott wants to profile Andre's LS.
In his journal.
In the journal, in paper. You know,
in
the Bible of overlanding, his Russian LS swap Buhanka. So you got some work to do this weekend, Andre.
Yeah, so the pressure is on.
The pressure is on now that they want to feature you in the Overland Journal.
So basically what a Buhanka van is basically, Ford control.
Yeah.
Ford control Jeeps, right? Basically, you're sitting on the front axle. The crumple zone are your knees, basically, right? The engine... in the Buhanka van would be like between you and the passenger.
Kind of like that old Toyota Sienna, like the minivan.
Yeah, kind of. Or also there are Ford vans like that. There were Chevy vans like that. So
let's not go too far into the Buhanka.
But Kia created a similar concept, but it's all electric. And by the way, all the comments initially said electric right? People were turned off by the fact that this was electric. I wasn't looking at that at all. I looked at the features of this thing. Humongous doors. There's a sliding door on the passenger side. There is a portal door, kind of a slide out drawer door on the other side where you can kind of step into, take off your shoes, make sure there's no dust, and then you enter the van. It had a tent on the roof. It had racks.
Opening tent. You don't have to pop it open. It pops open electrically. And here's the cool part. It had
modular interior.
Modular interior, so you can move stuff around, but it had a winch on the front. And then on top of the winch is a screen, and that screen actually displays how much weight the winch is pulling. How cool is that?
In real time.
In real time.
That's the concept. And then, of course, they said the wheels will make electricity while standing.
That
kind of, my skepticism kind of peaked.
Yeah, wait. I thought, okay, you're going to do regen. That's what I thought when they first said it. It like regenerates. I'm like, okay, yeah, I've been there, done that. But he said, no, when the vehicle is standing still, the wheels generate electricity.
And we're like,
How does that? Yeah, exactly. How does that? What? And apparently the way that works, as far as I understand it, is there are turbines, right?
Little propeller, yes.
In the wheels.
In the hub of the wheel.
And when wind blows, it
spins it
like a giant, you know, windmill. And that generates electricity, which powers the van. Of course, there's also solar panels on the roof.
Yeah.
And then... on the back, when people say when your immediate reaction is, I hate electric, I'm thinking to myself, if I'm camping and I can just plug in my vehicle into the battery without having to ever start the engine and worry about, you know, using all that noise and all that gasoline while I'm sitting there.
Generators.
And obviously a Sprinter van has a battery, right? And it has solar panels to charge up that battery. But this battery is, I don't know what the battery is in there, but it's like...
It'd be like 100 kilowatt hours, more.
Let's say like 10 times or 20 times as big as the current battery that's used to power, all the refrigerators and all the electronic gadgets in your Sprinter van, plus outlets everywhere. It was so cool, Andre. So, so cool.
Very innovative, right?
Yeah.
But you would say this will never be built
because
it was a SEMA concept, but it's based on a commercial van that they want to sell soon. So that gave me a little bit of hope, Roman, because if this was just one-off thing that they've created in the studio and will never be seen again, this is based on a production commercial van that they want to build.
You know how you know they'll never build it, for at least in America? It's got the rear view side cameras that are there in place of regular mirrors. And those are illegal in the U.S.
Yeah.
So, you know, they just stick the little, like, cameras out on a
stick. Sure, sure.
It's cool.
But they can add mirrors to it, Roman.
They could.
Yeah.
All right, and the second vehicle that I absolutely fell in love with was the Toyota ROX. R-O-X. Okay. Now, I know, because I've been out on the trail, that, you know, when I'm in a 4Runner, which competes with the Bronco and the Wrangler, especially in the marketplace, and I'm out there, I get a little bit of topless jealousy, Andre, because all the folk that are rocking their Wranglers and Broncos on a beautiful day can just take off the roof.
The roofs, panels. Yes. Yeah,
and
they can.
And I'm like, oh, I get a sunroof, I guess.
Right.
But it's not the same.
Maybe.
Right?
Maybe you don't have a sunroof.
And then, you know, some Jeeps have half doors, right, where lets the wind in and you feel like you're on a motorcycle when you're out there off-roading. Well, Toyota finally built a concept vehicle that had kind of a My Sky roof, like the Jeep had, you know, the roof that kind of, it doesn't.
Like a sliding cloth.
A sliding cloth yeah. roof. But they went one step further, and this is the part that really got me. First of all, the concept is brilliant. The whole.
It's gorgeous.
It's
first gorgeous. Of
all. It's built on an existing Land Cruiser, and it has, what, 37s, I believe?
It's rolling on 37s, so giant tires, huge wheel openings, but also it looks amazing.
Yeah, so it
looks
got
amazing.
It's got a built-in winch. It's got underbody padding, giant bumpers, all the stuff, you know, external lights from the factory, all the stuff that, of course, has been happening at Easter Jeep Safari for their concepts forever. So finally, Toyota is actually acknowledging the fact that their customers want to compete in that open-air, off-roading world. But what's the coolest part that none of the Jeep or Bronco competition has that this has?
You could fold the rear seats down with a mid-gate and open up the rear section as if it was a truck.
Yeah, so
it has a bed, basically.
It's got a bed, yeah. So you can either have a four- or five-seater,
yeah,
or you can fold the seats down and fold that mid-gate down so that you have an open-air experience, but you also have a bed. How cool is that, Andre?
So it's a little truck, basically.
Yeah. You know, I've been trying to buy one of these, but it's probably too late. So as you know, I'm Czech, and Škoda is a Czech company.
Yeah.
And like 25 years ago, I believe, 30 years ago, so you can actually import them, Škoda built a little pickup truck called the Fun. Have you heard of this thing?
I don't know. Let me Google it.
Yeah. Google Škoda Fun, and I'll tell you what it did, which is why I want to buy it. The problem is they're so hard to find, and back then the Škoda...
It's a little thing. Oh, yeah. Wow. You know what it looks like? It looks like a Brat.
Looks like a Brat or an El Camino, but here's the magic of it.
What?
Do you see the magic?
Hold on. No, there's somebody... Oh, you can remove the back of it?
No, it does.
The mid-gate.
It has more than a mid-gate. So it's a two-seater kind of El Camino slash Brat, right?
Yes.
But then the back section folds down and the whole thing slides backward. And then there are two seats that lower from the... Basically, it's not a firewall, whatever the opposite of the firewall is, you know.
The mid-gate area. Yeah.
So that slides backwards.
Ah.
And then there are two seats that come down so that the people can be sitting basically in the bed on seats that are already there with nothing above them.
And this was a production vehicle you could buy?
Yeah, the Škoda Fun, yeah.
Yes.
Is that cool?
It is very cool. It's very innovative. It reminds me of the Kia, actually.
Yeah.
You know, innovation-wise.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were like, I think they were, I don't remember anymore, but like 1.3 liter diesels or something. But yeah, this ROX concept kind of reminded me of that. Not quite as, you know, innovative in some ways because the mid-gates have been around, but also really cool.
Here's where I was when I saw this Land Cruiser ROX. First of all, the Land Cruiser is already on sale, right? Mm-hmm. Also on sale is the Lexus GX 550.
By the way, those are very much Jeep wheels. We have a set of those wheels on our Jeep.
Oh, yeah, kind of the style of it.
Kind of like that looks like a giant hex screw or something.
There's a Land Cruiser.
Yeah.
There's a GX 550. The new 4Runner is just around the corner.
Yeah.
The new 4Runner will probably go on sale, late January, maybe February or March of 2025. They're all based on the same frame, Roman. They're all based on the basically Tacoma chassis. They're all shortened. They all have five seats, maybe seven seats in some cases. They mostly have the same power. Okay, some of them have V6 versus a hybrid. But they're very similar, and they're in a similar price range. It seems confusing to me, because why would you have three SUVs in your lineup, one Lexus and two Toyotas, which are very similar to each other? Why don't you take a top off one of them to make one of them convertible, differentiate them further from one another, and make it super cool?
Well, I can answer the first question. Why would you have three SUVs basically going for the same audience?
Yes.
I think the answer was at SEMA. So when we started going to SEMA, which was, I don't know, 10 years ago, maybe longer, I forget now. It's been one SEMA just... Once you've been to one, they all become kind of mixed up in your brain, but... Uh-huh. Because it's so crazy there. But back in the day, remember we used to go and look at the off-roaders, and they were all like rock climbers. Today, there is not a single overlander, because that's what they've turned into, without like max tracks on the side.
And a shovel,
exactly.
A little baby shovel has to be on the side of it.
Yeah, so like overlanding, which I used to call camping, you know, is there a distinction between going camping for the weekend or going driving around the world? I suppose there is, but when you let marketing and media turn into it, there isn't much of a distinction. Has become so huge that everybody wants to be kind of perceived as, you know, having
an
that
adventurous active, person.
Adventurous person having an active lifestyle. Or they actually do it, or they actually want to do it. I don't know. It could be all of those. But, yeah, it's just that wave doesn't show any sign of abating. It hasn't crashed into the rocks yet of, you know, another trend. Right now, I think that the more off-roady it is looking, the more people want it.
And so you're that's saying why you have there's room for all of them.
Yeah, that's why you have all these off-roaders, I think, or at least want to be. I mean, you look at Honda with the Passport.
And the Pilot.
And the Pilot, right?
Yes.
And you look at Hyundai with their off-roady versions.
Well, they have Santa Fe. They have
right.
Well, they have Kia vehicles, right?
Kia has the same thing, right? They all have off-roading aspirations. I'm not going to call them off-roaders because they don't. I mean, to me, an off-roader, a serious off-roader, has to have a low range. Having said that, the Bronco Sport doesn't have one. It's pretty serious. But for the most part, if you were to pin me to the wall, what delineates a serious off-roader, it would be a low range. Forget about locking diffs. And, you know, a lot of these vehicles don't have that. But this has it. The Land Cruiser has it in spades.
Yeah.
And the other cool Toyota, this is an honorable mention, is when I was growing up, the car that I lusted after, and let's face it, the Toyota 86 should have been called the Celica. It just should have been.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because that was my sporty Toyota of my generation. And then the coolest of the Celicas was the all-wheel drive. It had the Coke bottle shape. It was basically a WRC, you know, variant that was street legal, had the little hood scoop on it. And so finally Toyota figured out that they had this wonderful thing that's kind of been underground and people, you know, have been lusting after it. And what they did was they took the 86 and they took the GR Corolla motor, that three-cylinder turbo, ditched the Boxster, made it all-wheel drive, put a bunch of headlights on it.
And a classic livery,
and the only thing that's missing is a Coke bottle shape. I would have blown out those sides a little bit more, but basically that's the all-wheel drive Celica turbo.
300 horsepower, amazing power, amazing style.
And they built it, once again, Toyota almost got it right. They built it as a race car.
With a roll cage.
It's
really a race car.
Yeah, but why? Why not build it as a real concept? I mean, the race cars to me are just purpose built. They don't suggest that it's ever going to be in a showroom. I mean, of course, there are race cars that have been turned into street cars, but I would have gone the other way. I would have actually recreated that Celica with the GR Corolla three cylinder turbo. Made it all-wheel drive, used the 86 as a platform, and just gone after it. But, you know.
Well, the GR86 already has a beautiful chassis, right? If you ask any car reviewer, I'm not one of them. You know, I focus more on pickup trucks and big SUVs. But if you ask a lot of people, they'll say, great balance, right? Low weight. So if you take that chassis and you add all-wheel drive to it and power, I mean, it could be very, very amazing.
Yeah, unfortunately, that hot hatch front-wheel drive category is almost dead right now. I think the only real, so I'm talking about like, you know, the Ford Fiesta, the Ford Focus. There were all these hot hatches that were front-wheel drive, Veloster. Only thing that's left right now is the Honda Civic Type R, I think, in terms of
the
GTI is still around.
The Golf GTI.
Yeah.
I mean, some Subarus, I mean, they're still there.
Subarus are all-wheel drive.
I'm talking about true.
I'm talking about true front-wheel
true
drive.
True front-wheel drive.
Yeah. There's all-wheel drive cars, GR80, you know, GR Corolla. We don't get it, but the GR Yaris, which they get in Europe, those are around. But the
true front-wheel drive.
Yeah, you know, the pull your steering wheel out of your hands, torque steer guys are almost all gone. With the Civic kind of being one of the last standing.
Having
said that, if you were asking me, Roman, what would you rather have, a Golf R or a GTI? I would say GTI all day. The Golf R is faster, it's more capable, it's better in the snow. But if you want something that's fun to drive, go for the GTI.
I think it has to do with weight, right? As soon as you go to the R, it becomes heavier, it becomes bulkier. But to have a low-weight vehicle, that's kind of really cool.
Now, we had some weird things happen to us. Why don't you tell them? So first of all,
amazing things, actually.
Yeah, yeah. So the best part was, when we were doing the walk arounds, I don't know what happened. Somehow people started to recognize. We've been going to see them a lot, and we've always gotten a handful of people that have come up to us and said, "Hey, can we have a photo?" And we love that. We love meeting you guys. But this year it was just nonstop.
There was a lot of youth, and thank you for stopping us and saying hello. And
but there was one really uncomfortable, weird thing that
there
happened.
There was one uncomfortable person.
Yeah, tell them what happened. We're kind of walking back to the media room.
Through this very crowded space.
That's the other thing.
Very crowded hallway.
Look, it's supposed to be for non-consumers, right? So people in the business. But somehow, I think over the years, and I think SEMA kind of looks the other way because they don't care and they appreciate the fact that it's gotten so huge. A lot of people who are there are maybe maybe associated somehow or maybe adjacent to people in the business, but they may not be in the business. Like they're not like working at body shops or fabricators. They may be like friends of these people because there's just a lot of people who seem to be walking around looking at
or
stuff.
Or just like just a car slowly, show. Yeah.
Yeah, like
visiting,
yeah.
Not working.
Yeah, and I say that because there's a lot of like, old dudes, and I guess I'm an old dude, in shorts, you know what I mean, who are obviously...
In a Hawaiian shirt or something.
Yeah, who are obviously there just kind of... to check out the show, not to actually conduct any fabricating business. They're not looking for the next paint booth. Let's put it that way.
All right. Yeah, anyway, so I over here over my left shoulder, I heard your voice.
Yeah, I heard your voice.
I heard your voice.
And I'm like,
yes. And I turn and there's this man, maybe my age, right? And he's looking at you and he said, I heard your voice. I'm like, yes,
and I was
did
like,
hear our voice.
I was like, yeah, maybe you heard me on YouTube. That's where I'm at.
And he didn't respond other than to say, I heard your voice.
And then he just kept following us, repeating, I heard your voice. And we were starting to get freaked out.
And we were like shoulder to shoulder in the crowd.
Yeah, but there's no way we're going to like scoot away. So Andre and I were looking at each other while this guy's behind us says, I heard your voice.
That was very strange.
Yeah, luckily there were so many people that eventually I think we lost him. But for the most part, the people we met were...
No, it was amazing people.
Were really cool.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. And, we didn't hear any comments like, hey, Andre, you really suck. You should stop doing what you're doing. We never got a comment like that.
No, everybody there is super nice.
And very positive.
Very positive.
Very, very happy to be there. So that was really amazing.
And we did one time... So the media badge has like a green strip at the bottom, whereas exhibitors have red...
Or blue or something.
Yeah. So one time we did have one perk of being media, and that was they let us go inside without having the dog sniff our bag or bag search. Not at the beginning of the show, during the show.
Yeah, during the show.
So that was nice. So thank you, SEMA. Appreciate that. The other one I wanted to talk about was some of the other manufacturers and what they brought. So let's talk about Honda, Andre, because Honda was there. They come every year.
Yeah, and in this way, this year we was a little bit more focused on motorsports. Honda's been in motorsports in a very big way.
They had a Red Bull Formula One car.
Yeah, they had the Formula One car there. They had a trophy truck there, which is kind of based loosely on a Ridgeline, just by the sheer fact that the bodywork in the front looks like a Ridgeline.
Yeah, I think their racing is called HRC, right?
HRC division. Honda Racing Company, basically, yeah. HRC. I think it's some ways in the previous years it was called HPD.
It was called Honda Performance
Development.
Yeah.
But now it's Honda Racing Company. So, and they had an Indy car there. They had rally cars there. They also had
a Formula One car.
This is cool.
This is really cool. This yellow thing. Tell them what you're looking at.
But they also had an Acura Integra HRC. It had an HRC badging. It's basically like a Type R Civic, but in Acura body and on steroids, right? It had all kinds of performance goodies, aerodynamics, a wing, unique exhaust system.
This is the closest
a lot of cool parts
to something that could be built. I was so excited. I was like, this could be something. Because look, if the reason I say that is, I don't like window shopping because, let's say you're looking at very expensive watches and I'm not a watch guy or cars. I don't necessarily like window shopping because I won't be buying it. I can't afford it. So I don't want to tease myself, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how I kind of feel about concept cars sometimes, that you'll never be able to afford them. So why even like pretend so? So this to me seemed like something that they could eventually build and sell until I got inside and I saw basically instead of the rear seats, they had put a roll cage.
Yeah, so it had like a rear seat delete, which takes an interesting usable vehicle and kind of cuts it in half, right?
Yeah, they're not probably going to build a four-door with a rear seat delete.
So there was another vehicle there, which was the Honda Pilot HRC, but this wasn't a street racer. This was an off-roader, you know, with even bigger tires than the trail sport, very huge steel bumpers, a winch, lights, racks. I think it had a shovel also.
Yeah, it had a shovel. Yeah.
What do you think? Can they build this? Will they build this?
Well, what's interesting is that in the past, right, their off-roady vehicles have, Honda's off-roady vehicles, especially this guy, right, have come from the factory and were designed as on-road vehicles that they've tried to customize to off-road. This is the first one with, like, serious off-road cred. Like, you've got a real metal bumper.
And huge skid plates.
And big wheels and tires and a serious lift. As far as I know, you don't have a low range, which makes it kind of problematic. But I've always scratched my head because Honda Motorsports built some of the best dirt bikes. They built
and
great
side-by-sides. Yes.
And yet, for on-road, they're kind of like the Germans. They just don't do off-roaders.
Well, they're very conservative, yes.
Yeah.
It seems like maybe even
they have jumped on the overlanding bandwagon, as you can tell by that.
And, of course, you know, we just saw the Passport Trail Sport, right? Nathan just drove it as a prototype. And we know that the Pilot Trail Sport exists. We're hoping the next Ridgeline Trail Sport will also continue this trend and actually get a little bit more off-roady. But they've always had an issue with ground clearance, right? They do a lot of cool stuff. The all-wheel drive system is amazing. The comfort is amazing. But the ground clearance lets it down, usually.
Yeah, so if you really want to go head-to-head with Jeep or with Bronco, you got to kind of come out of the box with an off-roader, and then you got to nourish and build a community of aftermarket fabricators and modifiers so that, you know, you can change the bumper, you can mount a winch. And if you can do that, Honda, then you're in the ballgame.
And they've done that with motorcycles and side-by-sides for decades, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they know how to do this.
But it was, as somebody who was in Colorado, and I know a lot of you guys, you know, are in Europe where off-roading is very difficult. And so for you, like, this is more interesting. What are you looking at there, Andre?
Well, another Acura
HRC.
This one is a complete race car, right? Yeah. So they've showed several of them as well. And they also had like a Le Mans prototype. They had a lot of racing
vehicles.
My
favorite was a Formula One Red Bull. Because I didn't realize how big those things are.
You come up to it.
And you think it's like one of those like go-karts. It's wider than like a F-150.
And it's maybe just as long.
Yeah. I didn't realize they were such huge vehicles. So now I see why passing's so hard. All right, let's keep going with the other manufacturers.
Yeah.
So Ford was there. What did Ford bring, Andre?
Yeah, so Ford brought several trucks, which I loved, right? So they had an F-150 ORV, basically off-road recreation vehicle that they showed some accessories on. They showed one supercharged F-150.
Yeah, Ford's been doing that, right?
They've been selling superchargers.
Yeah, they've been selling superchargers, but it's more than that. They've been selling superchargers that are installed at the dealership and warrantied by the factory. So it's basically cheap horsepower because you can get a Coyote.
And reliable horsepower.
Yeah, slap a supercharger. Now you're looking at 700 horsepower. And Ford will actually, you know, warranty it, which is great because, you know, that's a recipe for blowing an engine if you do it wrong.
Exactly. And so they also had several Broncos, freewheeling versions of it, like packages. They also unveiled something they called like a custom garage where you can go to the dealership and you can, get some more accessories, right? Kind of bundle together. Hopefully you can get it as a better deal. I haven't experienced this yet, so I don't know exactly how that works.
But the one interesting thing, which I think I need to comment on is, and this is Toyota. Once again, I'm not a Toyota fanboy. I'm just stating a fact, right? So, you know, NASCAR for a long time was dominated by the domestic car manufacturers, specifically Dodge, right? Mopar.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they left, and guess who jumped in?
Toyota.
And now, you know, Toyota is part of American NASCAR culture, just like apple pie and fireworks, right?
Yes.
It seems like the company has a long-term view. And for as long as we've been going to SEMA, the most prominent booth is kind of in the what hall is that?
It's the Central Hall.
Central Hall. And you kind of go up a set of steps, so it's up high, it's raised above everybody else, and that has forever been Ford.
As far as we remember.
Yeah, and they've always used it to showcase their lifted trucks and Mustangs and such. And this year, guess who had that spot?
Well, that space now belongs to Toyota. So, because during COVID, really, Ford stepped away.
Yeah.
And
just like Dodge stepped away. And,
yeah.
And so I think Toyota's smart. They think long term and they see that this is something that they want to get into.
They see opportunities like that and they just step in.
And so that kind of forced Ford into a smaller space, or maybe they didn't want to.
Which was very crowded, actually.
Which was very crowded. And then they unveiled a custom
lowered, slammed F-100, right?
Yeah.
Which was beautifully done. Just completely customized vehicle, probably thousands of hours of work.
But we couldn't get near it.
I know, yes.
There were so many people around it. They had just unveiled it when we were there, and you guys might be thinking to yourself, well, why don't you just come back? Well, because it's like 14 miles away from
from everything else.
Everything else, yeah. It would literally take us an hour to go there and come back. That's how long it would take to go there. So when we're there, when we did our walk around, I felt bad. There was some dude who I think was a fabricator walking around in Ford pajamas. I'm not making that up. Watch the video.
It was like a
Jewish fabricator.
Overalls.
Like he had a yarmulke and like
Ford pajamas.
Ford jammies. Yeah, it was so cute. And then I wanted to see the truck, but I couldn't. But all the other trucks.
But it had a huge supercharged engine. Yeah,
it was beautifully done. God, it was absolutely gorgeous. So congratulations.
And they also had several Broncos, right? And they always support. You know, Ford is really good at this. You know, they support the enthusiasts. They have a huge, you know, aftermarket presence. And also free wheeling options are to support the outdoors, right? Make sure, you know, we're supporting organizations that help us clean up the trails, keep the trails open, you know, and do kind of education around it. So really good stuff there.
Yeah. And then, we can't leave this podcast without once again thanking our sponsor. So we went over to WaySafe.
Yes.
Which is our truck hitch sponsor. And those guys had some pretty interesting stuff. It was pretty cool. They had a video where you basically could drive a badly set up trailer, which you
with a truck.
With a truck.
Like a video game, yes.
Video game, and you had to go like through these canyons and
on a highway.
In Utah and try to keep the thing from swaying too much. And you failed miserably. It was hilarious. So Andre, you were kind of like, you didn't know, because you were on camera, right? So
right.
You were a little like, you weren't sure of what you were doing.
And yeah, I was like, it was the first time I sat down.
And as you can see on the screen, your rearview mirror, and I'm like, Andre, your trailer swaying. And Andre was just so focused on driving. I'm like, Andre, your trailer swaying. So, of course, eventually, this is the funny part, it swayed so much that it basically jackknifed him. And then what happened?
And a huge semi just leveled me, hit me, like T-boned.
Yeah, so
T-boned it.
So it was bad.
I was
followed
dead.
By disgraceful. But it was cool that WaySafe.
And all the WaySafe people are standing there, and also some of the other people watching, and they're like, Andre, aren't you like the managing editor of TFL Truck?
Yes, I know. It was very embarrassing.
But
Andre,
to my defense, Roman, this video game had no brake controllers.
No,
I didn't have a brake controller.
It was like a video game where you sat in a seat with a steering wheel in front of you, right? And Andre kept reaching for a non-existent view, and he was like saying, "If this was swaying, I'd just hit the brake controller." I'm like, "Dude, there's no brake controller."
And then I smashed into the mountain.
Hey, when we talked to them about actually doing some maybe TFL branded stuff,
that'd be
hitches.
Awesome.
Yeah. So if that's something you guys would be interested in, let us know in the comments below. Or let us know, however you want to let us know.
Maybe like little safety kits, right? Like a tow hook some gloves, maybe some utility kits.
But the magic to WaySafe, of course, is that their hitches have little scales so that you know how much load, so that you don't overload it, so you don't get hit by, sorry, Andre, a semi-truck when you're
exactly
reaching for a non-existent brake controller.
Safety, safety, safety.
All right, let's talk about Mopar.
Mopar, that was cool.
Yeah.
And also Nissan.
We'll get. I'm working my way through those two. Don't worry.
All right. Mopar. So Mopar, of course, means Mopar is an arm of Stellantis, right? They've always been around. I mean, how long has Mopar been around? Like 70 years?
I don't know. Yeah, it's
a long time.
A long time.
And they do just more than just your, exhaust pipes and intakes.
They do crate engines.
They do crate engines.
A Helfand, dude. You could have bought a Helfand once upon a time. I think it maybe still can.
I think there may be some existing Helifants or Hellcat engines.
Yeah.
They now do twin-turbo Hurricane.
Yep.
Hurricrates,
yep.
They call them. They also do like parts, used parts, so you can go to a dealership, any Stellantis dealer.
Right now it sounds like a commercial.
No, I want to make sure this is important.
All right, what's your point?
Because affordability, right?
Okay.
So they provide affordable parts. So if you have a vehicle, I don't know, a Jeep Cherokee or a Ram 1500.
You think one part is affordable? I think it's manufacturer stuff tends to be more expensive than like the aftermarket.
He said 40% under
the head
market.
Of Mopar, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, well,
That's what they said.
Right. Anyway.
So anyway.
They were there.
But they had a couple of cool concepts there, nonetheless. And they were unveiling a light on top of a windshield.
That was cool. So they took one of the Easter Jeep Safari Jeeps, and this is also over at LTFL if you watch the video. And basically, they took one of the lights that normally sits on top of the A-pillar, and you could basically take it and spin it sideways so that now it's no longer sitting on top, but it's rotated.
And now it points down.
And then you can rotate it down as well. So you could rotate it to the left. You could rotate it to the right. You can rotate it up and down. So if you needed like to light up, if you're wheeling at night and you don't know what's next to you, you could light it up. Or if you were
changing a tire, for example,
you could light that up. It was a really clever concept.
It's still a concept. It's not on sale.
I don't think it's on sale yet. And then, of course, they had a bunch of vehicles that they built specifically for SEMA. What was your favorite?
So the Plymouth GTX, they had an Electromod there. I really love the look of that car.
Dude, badass.
Very badass, very large, and very cool. It had an electric powertrain with batteries, and they said they already drove it over 100 miles an hour. So it's a fully functioning, not just a trailer queen, but a functioning car. But that's still not on sale.
Yeah, I think they're trying to get people ready for the upcoming electric
Dodge Charger. But that, the intention is that you could buy like an electric motor, batteries, or maybe, inverters and all the system from them.
GM did that like 5 years ago. You could buy the bulk powertrain. I was there when they unveiled that.
I know, but you still kind of can't. I mean, I know they talked about it, right? They talked about it. They showed it 5 or 6 years ago. But it's still very difficult to do.
Hmm.
At least, we tried to electrify the truck together.
It's not easy.
And it was very expensive and very difficult.
How about truck-wise? Did they have any trucks there?
Remember that sand color 2500, Well, they had a Power Wagon.
Yeah, there's a Power Wagon.
Power Wagon, which is kind of highlights what's coming next. But they still haven't talked about any specifications for the new Cummins engine or the new V8 Hemi, anything like that.
Didn't hear anything. Here's the other thing that I learned in their booth.
Mm.
They have a weird naming structure. So there's two vehicles, two trucks that are coming, right? The Charger, the Ram Charger, and the Rev.
Yes.
Now Rev, EREV, stands for electric.
Extended range electric vehicle,
right? And then, of course, Charger, something.
Just a Charger or a car.
Yeah. But it's weird because you would think that the Rev would be the EREV.
It's not.
That has the additional pentastar motor to charge the battery, but it's not. The Charger actually is the Rev.
Yeah.
EREV.
You're talking about their trucks.
But the EREV is just a pure electric vehicle.
Yes.
It's not a range extender. So it was a little confusing.
Ram?
Ram, I don't
fix
know.
Fix your naming.
Because people are starting to go into the vernacular what, Rev means or EREV means, right?
Right. But they called their truck, the electric battery electric truck, Rev, R-E-V, as in revolution.
Yeah,
right?
I get that.
So that was kind of a cool play on words. But they did it 2 years ago, right?
But not range extended.
And now EREV, so there's an extra E, EREV came about, and now it means something else. So, Ram, it's a little confusing.
All right, now we're coming to our friends at Onyx. They were there as well, so we visited them. And they're, as you know, one of the companies that supports us on the Off-Road Channel, so we're very grateful. Because we use their stuff all the time, and they have something new, Andre, right? They showed us they have
turn by turn off-roading.
Yeah, so like Google Maps or Apple Maps, now if you want to go off-road and use Onyx, they do turn by turn so that it's a little bit easier. And when you think about it, turn by turn is pretty tricky because most trails don't have stoplights or stop signs.
Nothing.
Or intersections.
They have bushes and trees and rocks.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, and then, of course, you're over here at our friends from Nissan. What did they have?
Well, they had several vehicles.
They slammed the Frontier.
They slammed one. It was a crew cab. It was supercharged. Remember 20 years ago?
Yeah.
They had a supercharged Xterra and a supercharged Frontier where they had small V6 engines. With a supercharger, they were fun, they were playful. Now they introduced a supercharged V6 Frontier, but not as an off-roader, as a slammed.
Wait, when you say introduced it, they had it at SEMA. They're not building it.
No.
As far as we know.
No. Yeah, yeah, I'm sorry. They just showed it.
Yeah, they had a lot.
But Nissan, please build it.
Yeah, build it. Yes.
I mean, not the drift. You know, I don't think you can sell a drift truck.
No.
There's not many people, you know, who
Well, you could sell it, but not to a lot.
must buy a drifting truck, which is slammed on the ground.
Yeah.
But a supercharger would be kind of cool for like an off-road version.
Or even an on-road version. I would love to. Yeah, you know, do what Ford's doing. Take a, you know, page out of their book. Because as far as I know, you can't get a supercharger for a Ford midsize truck, but potentially you could do it for a Frontier, huh?
Well, and Ford is doing tunes, right, from the dealer.
Yeah.
Or from Ford Performance, you know, where you can tune your turbocharged engines at Ford. So Nissan could do something similar. And the other theme was, Roman, several manufacturers had tailgate trucks. Trucks with TVs mounted inside of them. They also had an Infiniti QX80 with a TV mounted inside of it.
It seems to be another trend, Andre, where people apparently like tailgating
in their luxury trucks.
In the luxury trucks with, you know, giant television screens and, you know, refrigerators to cool their libation. Yeah.
Yes. So that was a huge trend. So Nissan had it with a Frontier. Infiniti had it with a QX80. Toyota had it with a Tundra. Where else did we see TVs?
Everywhere.
We saw TVs somewhere else.
They were on every wall. Yeah. A lot of TVs. All right. Before we wrap this up, I think we're going to be running out of time pretty soon. What was your favorite vehicle there? And you can't say that Lamborghini swap Miata. Got to go with something else. I know what my favorite vehicle was. I'll tell you what it was because it was so cool and so unique.
The other trend was resto mods.
Yeah. Oh, my God. There's so many resto mods.
I think almost every booth almost had a resto mod.
Oh, that one, the Land Cruiser resto mod with the Tacoma body.
Yes.
That was so badass. Tell them what it was.
I think that's my favorite.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah.
So basically, you walk up to this, and it's a lifted FJ45.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like an FJ, you know, classic FJ Land Cruiser. But it's and then you look closer, and it is lifted. It's got a bigger tire, and then you look slightly closer, and something is not quite, you know, matching. And then you realize it basically has a Toyota Tacoma interior. And basically the drivetrain, you know, the frame and all of the other bits are new. So it was awesome. It looked really cool.
So I am not a huge fan of resto mods.
Why?
Well, I'll give you a couple reasons. I'll give you three reasons, okay?
Okay.
First, I love old cars because they're time capsules of their day. So when you get into a 20, 30, 40-year-old car or truck, it puts you back into that moment that you were there, like when you were a kid.
Okay, I get it. Certain noises, smells.
Yeah, it puts
the
you
way it works. Right.
It's as close to a time capsule until we invent time travel as you can get. And you can, you know, you could relive, for instance, that if it was your deal, the first kiss or your first drag.
Or the first buhanka.
Whatever that moment was that you loved in a vehicle, car or truck. You can relive that because everything is there around you. And when you resto-mod it, what you're doing is creating a hybrid of yesterday and today. And so it takes that magic out of it.
Okay.
That's reason number one. Reason number two, I kind of feel like you've given up, right? Because I feel like when I went camping as a kid, we went tent camping. And it was uncomfortable and it was cold and, you know, rocks dug into your bag.
I still do some
tent camping, you know what I'm saying? And it rained, they got, you know, and you got to keep the fire going. But it was like living, right? It was adventure. It was real. It was hard, but sometimes the best things in life aren't easy, they're hard. And when you resto-mod something, you're making something that was not super hard, but certainly much more difficult, right? Where there was a sense of potential adventure because the thing might die or you might have to figure out why the carburetor is flooded, and you're making it into a modern car, and so it just becomes a convenience that's no longer adventure bound. Does that make sense? There's no sense of like
difficulty. Yes,
yeah. Sometimes the more difficult things are, the harder they are.
Rewarding.
Yeah. And then the other thing I don't like about resto mods is that you're taking something that for all of us was affordable, and because all of a sudden people are starting to resto-mod it, makes it very unaffordable. So if you watch any of the auctions, right, like Mecum, and those resto-mods are through the roof.
And maybe that's why they're at SEMA everywhere.
Yeah,
maybe
so that's why. I mean, when I say through the roof, like let's take, you know, we had that old Bronco. Remember there was a Bronco there?
Yes. Well, there's a Bronco almost in every corner.
The first-gen Bronco.
Yes.
And that thing was kind of halfway to a tractor. It wasn't very comfortable. But it was real, and it was charming, and it was fun in its own way. The problem is you take those Broncos, which we bought at the time. This was probably 10 years ago now. For what, $13,000?
I think so.
Yeah, now you couldn't touch a first-gen Bronco for a first-gen Bronco for under like $40,000, right?
Or if it's resto modded, it could be over $100,000.
Yeah, and so you're taking these things that at one point were affordable for most of us and making them completely unaffordable because all the rich guys and gals are buying them up as resto mods. And so how many of those Broncos are left that are barn finds or that are just, you know, on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace that
untouched
that maybe you could buy and fix up? None of them, because all the guys resto modding them have bought those things up and then have flipped them for, you know, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000.
Okay.
That's why I don't like resto mods.
Fair points. And I want to hear what the audience, what you guys also think. But let me tell you why you're wrong.
Okay. Yeah. why am I wrong, Andre? Why am I wrong?
All right. I'm being too harsh. You're not wrong. You had some fair points. But here's the thing. For me, meeting a classic vehicle is like sometimes it's like meeting your hero.
Sure.
Right? You've built up that vehicle in your mind. Let's say maybe it's a Countach or maybe it's something else. It doesn't have to be a Lamborghini. It can be anything. It could be a Plymouth GTX. It could be
a Typhoon.
It could be a Typhoon. It could be a Buick or
whatever,
anything.
Whatever that thing was that you had up on your wall.
Yeah. And maybe when you were a kid, you know, let's say a 12 or 14 or 15 or 16, you remember that vehicle from then, and then you've built it up in your mind.
Okay, let's say the Countach.
Okay,
that would have been a car that or a Ferrari Testarossa, right? The one with like the cheese grater on the side. Yeah.
And then you finally, let's say you're successful, you can actually approach that car and actually drive it, or maybe buy it, and you met your hero. And the hero lets you down.
Yeah, you can't like in a Countach, you can't basically back it up without sitting.
There's no vision towards the back.
Yeah.
There is no space, maybe for a taller person. Yeah. It's hard to fit in.
The clutch is incredibly heavy.
Maybe it breaks down on your first drive. Maybe the carburetor explodes. I don't know.
Right.
So all of a sudden, you're terribly disappointed by the hero you just met. It crushes your soul.
Why don't you just buy the new Countach if that's what you want? Because they took a Countach and they basically, like whatever the anniversary was, Lamborghini built a new version of it.
See, it's kind of a resto mod now. See,
it's a factory,
so that's so where I am. So for me,
so you're saying if you want to meet your hero, and
I want the perfect version of my hero.
You want that car to be.
I want my hero to be the perfect version of it.
You don't want to meet Clark Kent. You want to meet Superman.
Right? Yes, kind of. So yeah. So in my mind, if you have a classic vehicle, pick it, whatever it is, and then it has modern brakes, modern cooling. It maybe has more power. It maybe has more convenience. Maybe it has Apple CarPlay.
It'll definitely have Apple CarPlay.
Well, yes. So if you combine all that thing and it has classic beauty, I think it's very attractive.
It's certainly much more usable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where I am.
Oh, fair.
But I like your points as well, because being a time capsule, there's something about it when you get into a vehicle and it reminds you of youth, smells or touches or whatever it may be.
Oh, there were a lot of touches when I was a kid.
Whoa.
There were a lot of touches, Andre. Because growing up as a kid, you had your parents at home, so the car was your
domain.
Space. Yes.
On that note.
I don't think that's being unfair. I think we've all had that experience.
Here, Roman, let me give you an example.
Okay.
Sorry, guys. I'm showing Roman a picture now, okay?
Yep.
So it's a square body.
Yeah, with big-ass dub wheels.
Forget about the wheels.
Okay, just a square body.
It's a square body crew cab, right? Yep. It's a heavy-duty K20 truck. And it looks nice, right?
Yeah, I like it.
But it is not a K20.
No, what is it?
It's a brand-new 2020 Chevy Silverado heavy-duty.
So they made it.
But it's a brand-new truck with an old body on top of it.
Yeah, cool. I'm not.
I don't know. I mean, so now you have a modern diesel, lots of power, incredible comfort, new interior, and then also classic body.
Hey, let's end on this. Another trend I saw, which I think is catching on, and it has been for some time now, are those single rear wheel SRW dualies.
With no duals.
Yeah, a lot of people are converting. It makes sense. Why would you want to deal with six wheels and tires when you can only deal with two, and probably not have to worry about like having to replace six? Or all the issues you get by having, those dually tires where you can't get them too close, you know, you can't get stuff in between.
You could have
them.
A blown tire because of it, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, and they work just as well, and they tow as much, so why not a single rear wheel?
Yeah, and I think tire technology allowed it to happen, right? Because now tires can carry heavier loads, heavier weights. Makes sense.
All right, well,
I love it.
I want to thank our patrons for supporting us and for you guys for listening and watching to this this podcast / video. If you're interested in seeing those videos that we talked about, the walk-arounds, they're going to be over at alltfl.com. And you could see me, especially on the car video, stumble and bumble and kind of meet my hero. Remember what my hero was? Remember the cool car we saw at the very end of that walk-around, which was that air-cooled Porsche that had gone on 7 races in 7 continents?
It was a snowmobile.
It was piloted by 2 women, which I thought was cool. And then last race they did was they put on, skis on the front and tracks on the back, which I thought was so cool for an old air-cooled Porsche. So cool.
That was one of your heroes?
I love that. If I had to pick what the vehicle that to me represented adventure and thinking out of the box, who would have? I mean, you know, those vehicles are very valuable now. But yet somebody just used it, raced it around the world, and then said, you know what? We'll go race it in Antarctica and we'll just put treads on it. How cool is that?
It is cool.
All right, we'll see you again next time.
I really appreciate you guys, and see you next time.
Ciao.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.